For the next 2 weeks, we've kind of got a mission emphasis, I would say. We're sending some of our missionaries off from here, and so we want to, we kind of combined it. This week, we're going to hear from Trent Thompson, who's leaving for China in about a week. With him is Brother Ron McFarland, whose mother used to attend here back in the 60s, I think he said. He's going to speak about China now. He was in China for 4 years until they kicked him out because he was too old. He got to be 65, and they won't let you teach after you're 65 there. So I'm glad they don't have that rule here, or I'd be gone. But anyway, he's going to speak to us about what's happening in China now. Next week, we have another brother, Brother Phil Lowry, who's going to speak, and he's give us a little report about his past year, and we're sending him off. He'll be going back to Tomsk here, and so he'll be speaking for us next week. And also, we'll have a brief report on the trip that we took to El Salvador. So these kind of are mission Sundays, I guess, if you please. But all of this is based on, at least it sums it up to me, in Matthew 9, verse 37 and 38. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." And so we're trying to send them out, and I know Brother Ron is here to recruit anybody else that wants to go, we're thankful for those who are willing to go. Brother Trent just finished his degree in Bible, he's been busy this summer. He's been in Romania. And then he went with us to El Salvador, and then he just got back from Mexico. He did all that this summer, and then he's preparing to leave to China. I don't think he left him a whole lot of time to prepare. I don't think he needs a whole lot of time to prepare. He's just ready to go wherever and all, and we appreciate that about him. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to him.
This is precious. This word is precious. I was overwhelmed during our singing this morning at the realization of how precious this is, what we have. Our God, this word that he's given us, his people all here gathered together, and pretty good number. And then we can take this and open it and read it and find direction, and hope, wisdom, salvation from God. Now, I know that there are Christians in China, and there are quite a few of them. There are actually a lot of them. But compared to the percentage of the entire population, it's a very small percentage. And if you were in class, I'm sure you heard Brother Ron, that it's not quite the same as here. And of course, there's cultural differences, but things like this, like gathering here today, and public display of faith and stuff, it's not so common, not so, you don't come by it as often. We have things here that are so amazing that sometimes I, and maybe you, don't realize how precious they are. And I just realized that this morning as I was reflecting on my past experiences this summer, and as I think about what may lie ahead of me. Jim said that I went to Romania this summer, El Salvador and Mexico, and especially in Romania, I met some people that were misguided and not very knowledgeable of the world. There's a lot of Christianity there, orthodoxy, and such things, but going there this summer and meeting these people and talking with them made me realize how important it really is for us, first of all, to read and believe and receive the word and do it, and second of all, to share it with others. I guess what I'm saying is some people just don't know. They just don't know. And that's what I expect in China, that there will be people who just simply don't know and have never heard. And that burdens my heart. There are people here as well. And I fully believe in and do and work here in the States where we're at. I'm all for that. But in the past months, as I was approaching graduation from Heritage Christian University, I was giving a lot of thought and prayer to what I wanted to do after graduation. There are a lot of options, and it's a bit overwhelming at times. But the more I prayed about it and the more I thought about it, I remembered Ed Mosby, one of Ron's co-workers in the gospel, coming to Heritage a few years ago and giving a presentation about China Now and what they do. And I was touched by that and influenced immediately and thought that may be something that I want and need to do. They came in a second time, showed a video of a young man in China, was an atheist, and how his contact with the teachers there, the Christian teachers there, influenced him and led him to believe that there is a God in heaven and that he is all-powerful and cares about us and our little lives. And that really moved me. We have lots of opportunities here to share our faith, to learn about Christ. And really, honestly, we're without excuse. We really have no excuse. Not here, not in the Southeast USA at least. And I think that's maybe not the case where I'm going. And that's why I'm going there. It's because I've had such a great opportunity to hear this word and to put it into practice. And it breaks my heart that there are some people who don't and may never have that opportunity. And so that is ultimately what brought me to my decision to work with China Now, is thinking about those people. I want to read a scripture you're probably all familiar with. In Romans chapter 10, in verse 10. I'll begin there. It says, "For it is with your heart that you believe and are justified, and it is with your mouth that you profess your faith and are saved. As Scripture says, anyone who believes in him will never be put to shame. But there is no difference between Jew and Gentile. The same Lord is Lord of all and richly blesses all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. How then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can someone preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news." As I said, I was giving a lot of consideration to what I would do with my life as I was getting ready to graduate. This was on my heart, and I feel that, and I believe that it is what God would have me to do. And there are some things that have been in my heart that have been conflicting with me. There's been a conflict in my heart, and I have all my family here, everything. This congregation, it's wonderful. I've missed you a lot these few months that I've been gone. And going to Romania, I met some people, made some friends, and the church there has asked me to come and to preach for them and be an evangelist there and build up their congregation. And there are these things and these opportunities and all these things that are dear to me here, but I feel like God has called me to go and be a light in a dark place. To go somewhere where they have not heard. And because they have not heard, they have not believed, and they have not called upon the Lord and are not saved. Paul said in Romans 15, verse 20, "It has been my ambition to preach the gospel where Christ was not known, so that I would not be building on someone else's foundation. Rather, as it is written, those who were not told about him will see, and those who have not heard will understand." It's not so much about not building on someone else's foundation for me as much as it is just the burden of knowing that there are people who won't hear about Jesus, and I might be able to go and change that, make a difference, and help someone to see the light of the gospel and be saved. And so this morning, I don't have much else to say, but get out there, do it, and preach the word. People's souls depend on it. We have to have Jesus. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, but it would be selfish to not do it. There are other things that I could do and want to do. And I've had that struggle, but I have to do this. I have to do this for God and for these people. And I just want to encourage you to think about these things. Think about people you know in your life that don't have Christ. Pray for them and do what you can. But really reach out, because our world's in a mess, and we have to reach out. We have to. It's not an option. So I do ask you to pray for myself and the other teachers and the Chinese people there, the Christians, and those who are not. They will be strengthened, encouraged, have courage, and may speak the word of God boldly to make a difference, make an impact. That's my hope. That's my prayer. And maybe some of you visit me while I'm over there. It might be kind of nice to have someone come visit me. But anyway, that's all I really have to say this morning. And so thank you, and God bless you.
Amen. Well, we're very proud to have Trent going with us. Some of you have these little papers that they're going to give you if you were not in the class this morning and got one. So if you have them and you're going to pass them out, if you guys would start doing that now, that would be helpful. I'm a little reluctant to give them to you because smart people read them, because I'm not that interesting sometimes talking, but I'll take my chances. It's great to be here. Good morning, everyone. It is good to be back here at the Central Church, where my mom spent several years and where I had a chance to visit as a young man. I actually grew up at Child Haven down in Coleman Children's Home that the Central Church has been supporting since long before I was there. But I want you to know how much I appreciate the work that you've done in the years past, because churches and people like you supporting that home saved my life. I remember as a little guy being out late at night. I went to live there when I was 8 years old, but before then, I remember being out with a bunch of guys late at night, going to the fair, and there was a guy selling this, you gotta be old to know what this means, selling snake oil out of the back of a wagon in a bottle, it'll cure everything. I think sometimes, although I shudder when I do, to think what would have become of me had it not been for Child Haven and for people like you that made it possible. So, from the bottom of my heart, thanks for that as well. Amen. I want to share some things with you about China, but before I do, I wanted to say, Gary, where did you go, brother? He's here somewhere. You guys have got to do something to liven him up. He was singing, and I reminded me, I preached in Dover, Delaware. I started preaching regularly when I was still at Child Haven, and that was 60 years ago. It's hard to imagine. But when I was in Delaware, I was there 27 years, and I've been there about 12, and we were kind of struggling with some things. And a man came to town with another job, and he led singing for us his first couple of weeks, and he was a really good song leader. So I invited him and his wife and took them to lunch and said to them, "Brother, you are an answer to prayer, because I've been praying for a good song leader, because the last couple of years we've had a lot of good men lead singing." It's not quite the same thing. That's a great blessing to a congregation. I want to share with you some things about China and about Christians in China. And I learned long ago there are a few things in life that people complain if they get more than they pay for, but preaching is very near the top of the list. So I will try to hurry here and not drag this out on you. But I do want to share with you some things about Christians in China. You talk about Christians in China, and most Americans kind of scratch their head and they said, I didn't know there were any Christians in China, or I didn't know that it was very successful. So let me share some things with you. But I want, first of all, to put out this disclaimer. In 2 Timothy 2:19, it says, "Nevertheless, having said that some people have abandoned the faith," previous in this passage, he then says, "Nevertheless, God's solid foundation stands firm, sealed with this inscription, 'The Lord knows those that are His.' And everyone who confesses the name of the Lord must turn away from wickedness." So when I talk about Christians in China, I want you to understand, I'm not trying to sit in the judgment seat and say who is okay with God and who is not. He knows those that are His. I'm just talking about people who self-identify themselves as Christians, just as much as if I talk today about how many people in America say they are Christians. So that's the context, and I'll share with you a little bit more detail and you'll understand some things. Christianity in China has been estimated, because there's no good way to accurately count it, that there are anywhere from 60 to 130 million believers in Jesus in China. And sometimes the numbers even go higher. Truth of the matter is, we don't really know. But what we do know is there are a lot of them. And it is believed by many people that by 2025 or 2030, unless something unusual happens, there will be more believers in Jesus in China than in any other country in the world. Now, I've been told, spend about as much money on evangelism in China as we spend in Guatemala. Now, that's not a complaint about Guatemala, nor is there any way to detract from it. There are several differences. Guatemala's close, so it offers opportunities for us to go and do things that we can't do in China. Guatemala says you're welcome to come. China does not let missionaries come. So there are a number of factors. But I do think it's important to realize what a huge job we have to evangelize China, when you realize that Chinese population would make 80 countries the size of Guatemala. And you think that if we spend as much money in China as we spend in Guatemala, and then we really have an opportunity to go to China, we're going to have a huge job in front of us. So this is a wonderful encouragement in some ways, but it's also a challenge. So let me talk to you about three types of churches in China. First of all, there's what we often refer to as the government churches. Now, the government doesn't own churches. They don't operate or run churches. But there are churches there that are part of what is known as the Three Self-Patriotic Movement. And they are officially approved churches in China. And most Americans are shocked to see this is a Catholic church in Jingzhou, Hubei, which happens to be my hometown in China. I spent 4 years there, and I never saw this church. I did see the Protestant church and was there for some weddings and some other events, met the local leaders and that sort of thing. I was told that there were some others around. Three Self means self-governing, self-financed, and self-propagating. Now, this is what the Chinese government wants their churches in China to be. And I said, when we got there and heard about this, I said, this is great. We're coming to China. We want people to learn the gospel and have churches. And we want them to be self-governing. We don't want to control them. We want them to be self-financing. We don't want to always be trying to finance them from America. And they should be self-propagating. Not just sending American evangelists to try to convert Chinese, but they should be doing. So this is not bad. But you also have to understand that sometimes the devil is in the details and definitions can change somewhat the focus. They in China are very concerned about Western religion and the influence of Western religion. I don't have time to tell you why I think they have some good reason for that anxiety. If you've never studied the Opium Wars, perhaps you should. When the British sent their soldiers in, conquered China, made them pay for the war, and insisted they be allowed to spread Christianity in China and continue to sell opium because they were making tons of money. And so selling opium and spreading Christianity in the Chinese mind got mixed together as sort of a package deal. So they had good reason to be concerned about foreign influence and control. But there is also the communist philosophy that says we want a united country where everybody puts the country, the state, above everything else. And so they're very concerned about Western influence. So what they're saying is no control from outside the country. There's a Catholic church in China, officially approved, but they do not recognize the Pope in Rome, and the government will not allow them to have relationships that would give them control or influence from Rome. So self-governing means stay out of our business, and they want the churches to be what they call, the popular phrase in China, with everything, is they want it to be a church with Chinese characteristics. That's another way of saying we want the church to advocate what the government would approve. And so they are very concerned about loyalties that might supersede loyalties to the state, because in their mind, this may be the foundation of a revolt. So they have this toleration, but they are not totally thrilled with it. And these churches are approved and have seminaries and bookstores and trains, have big buildings and all of that sort of thing. In fact, when we wanted Bibles, we called up the government church bookstore in Wuhan and said, we need 27 cases of Bibles. They said, okay, ship them through the China Postal Service. They're printed in China, perfectly legal, and that's where you can buy Bibles all you want. So there's some good things about it. But there are also some handicaps. This is the largest Protestant church, said to be the largest Protestant church in China, 10,000 members in a city called Changi. It is, as you can see, it's a big, beautiful building. So they have big buildings. They have crosses. If you came off the interstate highway in Jingzhou, you'd look out across and you'd see huge white steeples and a big gold cross, and that was the Protestant church in Jingzhou that we visited. These are government-approved churches. They have meetings, but things are changing somewhat for them too, and I'll share some things with you about that. Christianity today, these types of churches, the government churches, and secondly, there's what we call house churches. Now, you notice the word house is in quotations because it kind of covers a number of things. Sometimes people, one of the brothers, mission deacon over in Memphis, kept talking about Ron goes to China and he does cloak and dagger work sharing the gospel. Well, no cloak and dagger work. Everybody in China, the teachers, the government, the officials, all knew that we only send Christian people to teach in the universities. They know that all of our Christian teachers have what we call religious discussions. So this is not news to them. It certainly wasn't cloak and dagger. And we didn't live in mortal fear they'd find out. Li Hanjing, I showed his picture earlier today in the thing, baptizing a student in our apartment, called me one day and said, the police called me, said they want to come talk to me tomorrow. And I said, well, okay. He said, what should I tell them? I said, Lee, look, we're Christians. We're sort of committed not to lying to people. And I'd recommend you just tell them the truth. But I also know you don't have to tell everything you know to answer a question. So answer the question, answer it honestly, and then be quiet. Don't say any more. Then he called me back later and said, they called again. and said, they want to take me out to lunch to talk to me. I thought, I never had a policeman call me and say, I want to talk to you, I'll take you to lunch. But interesting approach in my book. But he said, they have four policemen going to come talk to me. And they're afraid that if four policemen come to my apartment and pick me up, that will frighten my landlord. I thought, boy, I think he's right about that. But I have to tell you, it was a level of consideration I never anticipated from the Chinese police. So, he went to lunch. He called me back later and says, well, I talked to them and they asked me a lot of questions and I just told them the truth. And he said, when we finished, I said, what was their response? Oh, he said, they said they appreciated it. I seem to be very honest. I'm not trying to hide anything. And they said, you know, in China, we have religious freedom. That is what the Constitution says. But like every other constitution, it winds up pretty much meaning whatever the people in power will actually make it mean. Not necessarily what you thought it would mean. So they do have religious freedom in the Constitution. Anyway, he said, said they want to come to our meetings at your apartment because they wanted to talk to him about the meetings at our house. He said, they want to come and they want to send the youngest one because he looks like a university student. I said, what did you tell them? He said, I told them, okay. I said, well, what did you think you might tell the Chinese police? No, you can't go. I don't think so. So, sure enough, he came. Only Lee and I knew his policeman. After he went home, I said, Lee, did he say anything? He said, yes. He said, there are a lot of problems in China, and this would be good for Chinese people. I said, is he coming back? He said, yeah, he wants to come back. I said, well, Lee, you keep inviting him until he either becomes a Christian or gets tired and quits coming, whichever happens first. He came seven times, sat in our apartment. We got the Bibles out. We sang the songs in Chinese and English, and he went away and was very happy. We had that kind of response often. It's like I told some folks earlier, this is the fruit of the Spirit. When you're not trying, and he wanted to know we weren't trying to stir up unrest, that we weren't trying to make the students unhappy with their government or their country or make them allies with America or look for spies, or because foreign teachers, especially Americans and old ones, are celebrities in China. And he wanted to make sure we weren't trying to use our influence and position to give them, to give us money or something like that, to abuse the relationship. And once he saw that wasn't the case and talked to the students, then he was perfectly happy. And we never saw him again, never heard him from him again, and never had a problem because of it. So house churches can mean anything from a group like this that might be meeting in an apartment. It basically means a church that is not an official three-self government-sponsored approved church. So it's an unofficial church. It's not underground, although they're often called underground. The government knows about almost all of them. There's not any group that gets together regular in China. The government doesn't know what they're about. It might be like that. It might be a bigger group like this meeting in a place they fixed up for their church meetings. Or it might even be a place like this, where the house church has grown and they go out in the community and get a place and build their own building. And they have their own building. I heard recently of a house church in China that had 10,000 members, and they had a building. I saw it looked like a university campus. And the government kind of ignores that and lets it happen. But if they challenge the government, then they may begin to have a lot of trouble. But there are some changes coming in China, and they're going to make a big difference. The third kind of church is what we would call the Beijing International Christian Fellowship. Now, this is not the kind, but this is one of those churches. This is a church, the largest interdenominational church in Beijing, but you notice it says it conducts its services in about 8 languages, including English. But there's another important point. Only foreign passport holders are allowed to attend. Some of you may have heard in the year 2008 when they had the Olympics in Beijing, did you hear them talking about that the Church of Christ had been approved in China? I heard a lot of people talk about it. I saw it hanging there, and people were really excited. Oh, the Church of Christ has got government approval in China to meet and have worship services. And they did. They got permission in China for people who come to the Olympics who were foreigners to come and worship together. But they could not bring local Chinese nationals. And this is, there are many of these churches because there are many foreigners who are Christians living there. So they will have a church and they may have 300-400 people, a group this big even. But no Chinese local people without a foreign passport are allowed to attend. So you've got the government churches, you've got the house churches, the unofficial churches, and you've got the foreign fellowships as three basic kind of churches. Now, surprisingly, there are often privately owned Christian bookstores. This one is in Guangzhou, down in the southern part of China, where four of the young men traveling with me, the short man is the younger brother of the brother in the middle. The other three are all Christians. And George, the one in the striped shirt, wanted his brother to come travel with us because he wanted him to meet some Christian Chinese people and some American Christians and get him interested in the gospel. While we were in the bookstore, his brother saw there was a Bible there on the counter by the checkout, and he said to the lady, "How much is that? I'd like to buy that Bible." And she replied, "I cannot sell you the Bible. If I sell you the Bible, the government will close my store." They are not allowed to sell Bibles in the privately owned Christian bookstores. But they sell all kinds of Christian literature, Christian study books, all kinds of things there. Here are a group of Bible story tapes and CDs available in the bookstores. They can be sold. But it's just a rule the Chinese government makes. I don't control the government and I can't change it. And they can't either. But I did think it was interesting that while they have the privately owned stores, sell a lot of good books, they cannot sell the Bibles. Bibles are readily available in China if you know where to find them. Every government church has a bookstore and you can buy them there. Like I say, we ordered 27 cases. Up until recently, you could go online and go to Taobao, Taobao.com. You'd get it all. If you did it in America, you'd get a Chinese website. But if you type in, you can do it now. If you type in the word Bible in English, you'll be surprised at what comes up. It will be only a small fraction of what came up 2 years ago. I did it a few years ago for illustration and educational purposes with people, and there were probably 40 or 50 Bibles available on Taobao. Now there may be one or two. And that's one of the changes that's occurring with the new president, and I'll talk to you about that in a minute. I did want to show you this Bible, though. This is Wang Ho Chong. Remember the brother I showed you with his wife and daughter, and then he was baptized in the other brother? This was the Bible that he had about 3 years, maybe 4 years after he became a Christian. And I wanted to take a picture of it to show people how hard he studied. I didn't have to search through his Bible to find pages marked like this. I could just almost flip it open to any page and it would look like that. Wang is a diligent student. That Bible just about fell apart. He finally had to get another one because he was losing the Word of God. Some books that are famous in America, the Purpose-Driven Church was published in Chinese. This is Max Lucado's book called Fearless. Many of the popular books that help people live Christian lives and deal with issues are available there in the private Christian bookstores. This is the one in Wuhan where we ordered the Bibles with Wang and Lee in the background. Three changes, and very quickly through these, that we think are going to affect the Chinese people and perhaps our ministry. We don't know. We'll just have to see how it works out. First of all, Xi Jinping is the president of China. Presidents in China serve 5-year terms. It's been in the Constitution now for 3 or 4 decades that they serve 2 5-year terms. At the end of their first 5 years, the president calls a group together, maybe 100, 120 of the key party leaders. And they have this meeting, this great congregational meeting there with that group, and they make a lot of decisions about what they want to recommend to the gigantic body of 3,000 or more who come to do the official deciding. However, and typically, as the previous presidents have done, they would announce 2-3 months in advance the major points they wanted to bring up and changes they wanted to have made in the way China was governed, or maybe in the Constitution. After that, then they hold an election, and usually almost every, in fact, every time I think, the president that just finished 5 years is reelected. Then next year, maybe his vice president would become president or someone else might be chosen. However, recently, when they did the last meeting after Xi Jinping finished his first 5 years, 3 days before that group got together to decide what they would recommend, he announced that he was going to ask them to remove the term limits from the Constitution. So there would no longer be 2 5-year term limits for a president. He announced it 3 days before. That did not give the public much time for outcry or people to think about it or do anything. And when that small band or group, basically of 120 or so, when they make a decision, never ever has the 3,000 people that would then follow up meet, never ever have they voted no on anything that group decided. Obviously, they are the power brokers in China. So he got that group to agree to remove it. The judge body approved it. That is no longer a limitation of 2 terms for a president. Xi Jinping can literally now be president for life. Furthermore, he has announced his first 5 years. He went on a big campaign to root out corruption. And there's a lot of corruption in China, especially among powerful, influential leaders, political so in provinces and the government everywhere. So it's a legitimate need. But as many things, it depends on the details. And it seems that Xi Jinping pursued those who were corrupt, but were also not particularly very devoted to his agenda, and replaced them with people who were very devoted to his agenda. So that when it came time to have this big decision, the people who would have led the opposition against him were in prison somewhere because they'd been arrested and convicted for corruption. And so that rest of the people voted it through, and he got everything he wanted, and now is possibly going to be president for life. They put that in the Constitution because they did not want another Mao. They didn't want another cult of personality ruling China as a virtual dictator, well, for years and years and years, even into their old age when they're not very competent. So that's why they did it. But this may change, and we don't know what it will do. He's also really pushing the idea that the Communist Party must control every aspect of Chinese life. And so he is also pushing hard about the Christian communities in China, especially the house churches. He is now pushing that they will be required to register, and they can ask for and apply for a certificate that will allow them to have religious services and activities for 3 years. There are several points in there that are significant. They are a little shy to register because they have no guarantee that exposure won't be abused. The other thing is they figure if they register, now they're going to be expected to be cooperative with whatever the government says, or they won't be given another permit after those 3 years. So they know this is going to become a means of trying to control and restrict and restrain their behavior and push them to create a church with Chinese characteristics. That means a church that not only exalts God, but perhaps even more so, exalts loyalty to the Chinese people and to the country of China, because he believes that has to be the number one loyalty. And anything which has the risk of causing people to not be submissive to the government is to be feared and, if at all possible, eradicated from the society. So we don't know how this is all going to play out. But it is one of the things on the scene that is going to affect Chinese people and perhaps our ministry as well in years to come. These new house church regulations about them having to have permits to meet and about them having not being able to rent. Because many of I've been to house churches where they rent an apartment. That's all the apartment's used for, is it's their little church meeting in a big high-rise building. And they may have 50, 60, 70 people that come there and they get out a kiddie pool and fill it up with water, and that's where they do their baptizing and they sing and worship there and they meet and do things. But there is now going to be some pressure on these people that if the group renting your apartment is not registered with the government, you can't rent to them anymore. And so they're going to use and manipulate these house church regulations to put pressure on the house churches. And we're concerned about the impact of that over a long time. Christianity Today, March 7th of this year, published an article, China just made life harder for Christians. And it was these kind of things that they were talking about. One last thing. Citizen surveillance. You ever go for a loan anywhere? Do you ever ask a bank to loan you some money? If not, you have more money than I had, because I had to do that sometimes. And they'd say, what is your credit score? Well, if your credit score is high, then they may loan you money. If it's low, well, maybe not. Credit score, you know, controls a lot in our life. They don't give credit scores in China. Well, maybe they do. I don't know anything about that. But now they give social scores. The way they do it is by citizen surveillance. They now have about 120 million cameras. This is at an intersection on a street. And they now have about 120 million cameras. They're using facial recognition software to identify people in China. And you see the little dots. And these people walking down the sidewalk, they can identify them. They know where they are. Their goal is anyone in any kind of a public place can be identified within 3 seconds based on facial recognition. Let me back up. I want to show you this here. There are places in the big cities. They've been doing a big experiment in 3 or 4 big cities, and they're now beginning to push this out nationwide. If you drive through an intersection with 4 people in the car, before you clear that intersection, those cameras will identify every person in that car. They'll know if it's a male or female, a man or woman, and they will know who it is. If you walk across the street, you're supposed to walk in the big cities. Remember that a few years ago, all these people lived in the country, across the street, anywhere. So the idea of jaywalking is just something that in small cities especially, they think this is just the way God intended it. But in big cities, it's creating problems because their roads may be 6 or 8 lanes wide and people are just crossing everywhere. It's dangerous. So they're really pushing no jaywalking. Well, if you jaywalk across an intersection in one of these big cities, when you get to the other side, you may see a giant billboard there with your picture on it saying you just jaywalked. You're a bad citizen, shaming the public. One man wrote some things on the internet the government didn't like. They told him he had to apologize. So he apologized. They said your apology was not sincere. So he applied for a plane ticket. And he was told he could not fly because his social score was too low. He also cannot ride a train now because his social score is low, because he wrote things the government doesn't like. He's not done any crimes except that he wrote things they don't like, and his apology was insincere. His children cannot go to private schools. He cannot buy a house because his social score is too low. So they will now give social scores to every person in China, every citizen, and perhaps to every foreign teacher. And we might someday ask for a plane ticket. So you can't fly. Your social score is too low. You jaywalk too many times. In Jingzhou, we did it all the time because it was a little town. But we just don't know what the outcome of all this is going to be. But it certainly gives you the idea of the possibility for a government determined to control the people and manipulate things so that they have ironclad control, and what it will foretell for the Christians, it's just impossible to know. So I tell you about these things, not to alarm you, certainly not to alarm Trent, but I just tell you because Trent said, whoa, I didn't know that. Now, as I told the group this morning, they wouldn't arrest us if they didn't like what we did. They'd tell us to go home. We've sent 800 people in the last 25 years. They have never, ever sent one of our people home for sharing the gospel. So we're not worried about that. But we don't know what the future holds, especially for the Chinese. And that's where our real concern lies. They face much more danger and risk than we do. So I want to close by asking you, pray for missionaries all around the world. They may live in peaceful situations, or they may not, but they do make great sacrifices of family and fellowship to be there. Pray for all of those who go to China to teach and be missionaries. They need your support and your prayers. I hope you will communicate with Trent while he's there. Send him a card, a letter every now and then. I don't think it'd make him mad if you send him a box with, you know, some cookies or chocolate or something. Probably he wouldn't be real unhappy with that. Pray for more people to be willing to go. The great thing about this is China pays most of the expense, and most of the people who go never plan to be missionaries or foreign teachers, but they found out they can go, and they don't have to go raise a lot of money, which is the most difficult thing about mission work. And it's a great opportunity, and we have tremendous support for them. And so pray for the people that we can find more people. We could put 30 more teachers next year in the universities in China. They want us to bring people if we can just find them. But finally, especially pray for the Chinese Christians. They face much more danger and risk than we ever will in China. They'll send us home, and that's sad, but they will arrest and put the people in China in prison if they don't like what they did. I showed you that largest Protestant church that was an officially approved government church. But some of the things the government did, the preacher said this was not right, the way they were treating some of the people, and he spoke out against him, and they came and arrested him. They put him in prison, and now he is in what's called a black prison. That means it's one out there somewhere that nobody really knows where it's at, and nobody can communicate with him. Family cannot visit. They don't hear from him. So even preachers and leaders in the government-approved churches are at risk if the government takes offense to what they do. So pray for these Chinese brothers and sisters. They face much more danger than we do. So I want to close by just asking you, what is your mission?